This episode of the Educated Ignorance Podcast is brought to you by the For Frequency Sake Podcast Network. Subscribe to the For Frequency Sake Podcast Network on your favorite podcast platform for the newest episodes of The Data Lab with Professor John Bush and Dennis Mickelson, as well as new episodes every week of Card Subject to Change, our new wrestling podcast with CZ and Nick. And three times a week, releasing episodes on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Fridays, the Educated Ignorance Podcast. On Mondays, you will get full breakdowns of the Sunday night football game, as well as a couple quick-hitting topics from some of the NFL action on Sunday. Tuesday will be a quick-hitting reaction of the Monday night football game, as well as a full slate review of the Sunday games, the biggest and broadest topics from the weekend of football, as well as some college football stuff. And, of course, that Tuesday will be the Elite Eight episode each week for the NFL season, where we reveal the top eight teams, according to myself, in the NFL. And then on Friday, we will be releasing each week a big kind of preview for the weekend's games coming up, as well as the Sinister Six podcast every week with Mac Fulton. He will be joining us every week for the Sinister Six, joint venture of NFL games and college games throughout the year. Our best six picks of the weeks. We will also have some betting stuff in there as well, against the spread, over unders, things like that. So stay tuned for those three episodes a week of the Educated Ignorance Podcast here on the For Frequency Sake Podcast Network. And as we said in the preview there, we're also brought to you by our podcast network, which every Sunday we have the big show For Fantasy Sake, breaking down the week's fantasy plays, best bets for the week, weekend, all that good stuff. I've been on there every week for the live for the last three, and it's really fun to get on there with the guys, to get on there with Chris, DJ, Nick. There's a really good chance that I will be on there all for the whole show next Sunday, so check it out live on Twitch, Facebook, YouTube, here on the Four Frequency Sake Podcast Network. In this episode, of course, as always, we're going to break down the Sunday that was in the NFL. We had, so honestly, it wasn't the greatest day of football. I'm really mad that I wasted 3 hours of my life on the big screen with the team that will not be named. They are no longer going to get big screen duties. I think this was their last week with main screen, shares, if I had to guess. We're not going to name them, though. They play here in Illinois, and they're a quote-unquote professional football team. There could be a rant I go on them tomorrow, but I just don't want to tonight. And there were just some kind of ugly games in the early slate. I got about six games here. We'll kind of talk about some of the ones that were important to me. But other than that, we'll get into more stuff tomorrow. That Monday night game is pretty big between the Rams and the Niners. But yeah, as always, we're going to get through this. Buckle up. Enjoy. Week four is almost in the books. Let's get rolling here. As Russell Wilson says, let's ride. They're 2-2. Brutal. Feel bad for him. Not really. It's funny. All right, let's get rolling, boys. Tonight, that team from Kansas City has still got their game and an impressive performance on the road. There were so many questions that were coming into tonight. I had no read on this game. I was really stumped on who could win, how the game would unfold, and we learned pretty quickly that the Chiefs' offense was ready to go. And maybe a lot of it had to do with the fact that they played really bad last week, and they felt like they gave one away. They were going to make sure that they left no doubt tonight. I believe You have what happens at the beginning of the game, a fumble on the kickoff, and then you score a few plays later, two plays later. That's big. That's a big momentum boost that really can get you going, especially when you're trying to, you know, come out and make a statement. That's a way to do it and really get yourself rolling. But their offense was clicking from the beginning. I got numbers for you that are just appalling. The first three games of the year, the Bucs were averaging 9 points per game allowed. Tampa Bay has only given up 38 points one other time tonight, or one other time in the 10 year since Tom Brady has gotten there. That was at home in that debacle 38-3 game against the Saints the year they won the Super Bowl on Sunday night. Tonight, it happened again. They gave up 41, and they gave up 28 and two quarters after having given up 27 points all year through the first 2 weeks. What they were able to do offensively, the Chiefs, was mind-boggling. And I want to kind of talk about some of the stuff they were doing. I always mention on here, you know, the way you can design and scheme an offense and how you can make a defense play from sideline to sideline. And the Chiefs did a really good thing tonight of using each third of the field at every level. So you have the shorts, the intermediate, and the deep. Short is about 0 to 10. Intermediate's about 10 to 20, sometimes 25 depending, usually 10 to 20, and then deep 20 to 25 and above. They were using all of those different, mainly though, the short and the intermediates to really just carve things up, move the ball quick, not allow the Tampa defense to get any pressure, and they just were rolling. And they were also using each third. What do I mean by that? You have left third, right third, middle third. It's pretty simple. When you're a defense, depending on the coverage, that's you break up into the thirds. You have the, you know, it's pretty simple. From sideline to sideline, if you're looking, if you're standing in an end zone and you're looking down to the end of the field, you have the left third of the field, the middle third of the field, and the right third of the field. Sometimes it'll be quarters because that'll be, the coverage will be four, cover four, cover two. When it's like cover one, cover three, it's broken into thirds. All of that fantastic little analytical, etc. That we love to talk about. So I just like to talk thirds, you know. You obviously see a lot of that too deep stuff we're seeing as of late, but I think thirds is just the easiest way to break it down when you're talking it from an offensive side. So the what the Chiefs are doing is quick passes. They were able to use the run game tonight. After last week, the run game was pretty non-existent. Now, again, this isn't a team that's going to line up and just gash you. It's going to be small circumstances unless they play a team that just really can't, you know, stop the run. Like if they played one of those two teams that were playing up in New Jersey today, neither one of those two teams can stop the run. And the Chiefs were able to game plan to where they could, you know, move the ball up and down the field, make a very good defense for Tampa Bay, guard sideline to sideline, and they were able to use all their different weapons. Now, a lot of that tonight was Mahomes, and Mahomes was able to freestyle a bit. They had that second down, they had like a second or third down on their second drive where he just breaks out of a sack and kind of just lofts one to Juju for a short like 5-yard gain that picks up the first down and keeps the drive going. It's 14-3. They're on the goal line. He does some crazy Harlem Globetrotter shit and just shot puts the ball in the end zone for Edwards-Helaire, and they extend the lead. That type of stuff you can't teach, and Mahomes does it. We see sometimes Josh Allen do crazy shit like that. These good quarterbacks are able to do these things, and the stuff Mahomes does, listen, man, he's one of one. And the way he played tonight, the aggression they played, the ferocity they played, I think is why Mahomes is still the best quarterback in the league, because he's able to be punctual and be perfect and just make things look easy. And when you have to have a freestyle moment, he can do it pretty much better than anyone in the history of the league. And right now, you know, when he's on like that, it's impossible to stop them. Now, one of the things tonight that I was impressed with from Kansas City, maybe the most, that was a big question mark, because coming into the season, and as a lot of people have said, the mainstay for this Chiefs offense after losing Tyreek would be that they could control the ball a little bit more. They wouldn't have to explode offensively, which they didn't tonight. It wasn't big gash plays that they were doing. They did a really good job. Tonight was what we expected the Chiefs offense to be, and this is a big reason why. Their offensive line, people believe they have not just one of, but the best O-lines in the league, and tonight they were great. Joe Tooney was magnificent, and tonight was one of the first nights this year they were really full from guard to, from tackle to tackle. What they were able to do all game long was just silly. How they were able to move the ball, blow guys off the line. Vita Vea was non-existent. The pass rush wasn't existent. Eventually, the Bucs were blitzing more in the second half, but they were still able to counter. It was just so many different things that the Chiefs just had answers for, and that was impressive. Now, one of the things that I've always had an issue with Kansas City is that they are a little too gimmicky on the goal line, but tonight it worked. You have, what'd they have? They ran like the Travis Kelce Wildcat. They had Noah Gray quarterback sneak a touchdown. They ran Jerick McKinnon on a Wildcat on the goal line, I think. So those play, it worked tonight. But you see moments where they get a little too bit over their skis in game in some games, and it bites them in the nuts. That's something that you would almost want to see that not work, because when it does, they feel like they can go to it. So here's a perfect example. They have a chance to put the Bills away with a touchdown after a Tyreek Hill crazy punt return last year in the divisional round with about 3-4 minutes left. It's like 3rd and 1, and they run some bullshit option play with like Travis Kelce and Mecole Hardman or something. And they get stuffed. They end up settling for 3, and then that's when all hell broke loose in that game. Allen came down and scored. Then the Chiefs went back and scored. Bills came down, and then 13 seconds. Bob's your uncle. We all know what happened. But those are the moments when they try to get a little bit too fancy, and all of a sudden, you know, you're caught with your nuts in your hand, and that's when things go south. So I've always had a problem with those. It looks cool when it works, but they are just so – they've never been good in short yardage, so they have to gimmick these plays, but I just wish they wouldn't. They're better than that. Like I said, it's fun when they work, but – other than that, you know, hey, tonight it did. The ball went through the net on those tonight, so it's no big deal. One thing I want to touch about on Tampa that is a good sign, even though you're 2-2, the world's not falling. Look at how many teams in this league are 2-2. The Giants are 2-1, okay? The Seahawks are also 2-2. You're fine. You're absolutely fine. Like, people are going to want to freak out, like, oh my God, they're 2. No, it's fine. There's so many teams that are good that are 2-2. Look at the Ravens. They're 2-2. As we said, the Bucks, Seahawks are 2-2, and they're not good. So, like, there's bad teams that are 2-2. There's a couple bad teams that are 3-1. Looking at you, Cowboys. Looking at you, Giants. There's a couple good teams that are 2-2 right now. 1-3 is sketchy. 0-4, you're fucked, which I don't think anybody is, actually. But 1-3, doorstep of nothing. Doorstep of season over. Doorstep. Panthers, Saints, looking at you. Steelers, probably looking at you. Teams like that. So, not good. Patriots, probably looking at you also. But, the things I wanted to talk about, offense tonight looked pretty good. Two mistakes, and one wasn't even on offense. You have the fumble to start the game. Just can't have that. Gives them all the momentum. And then, you know, pretty much at that point, you're allowing them to start each half with the ball. Can't do it. And then it's 21-10. So it's 21-3. You come right down and score. You get a stop. And you have a chance to cut it to 21-17, and maybe the game can flip. But overload blitz off the right side. Brady doesn't see it. He gets blasted, loses the ball. Chris Jones scoops it. A couple plays later, Chiefs score to go up 28-10. Those are really the mistakes that kind of kept this game at arm's length. If the Chiefs are able to, if the Bucs are able to score and make it 21-17, this game could get interesting. You know, they could maybe get some stop. Like, they already got one stop. You're in arm's reach. Maybe you can feel like you can just continue to try to go blow for blow and maybe get one more stop. But that was, you know, maybe forced them into a mistake, but not good. They were able to get healthy tonight. Chris Godwin played well. They were still able to run the ball well. Offense moved, and I think that's something that is a better feeling after the last few weeks where guys were out, you know, no continuity, and you struggled. Offense seemed like that's going to fix itself. And now for the Bucs, look, you're in maybe the easiest division in the league. Because even the AFC South is bad. That's going to be a war zone to try to win. Tennessee and Jacksonville, we're going to talk about Jacksonville later. The Colts are a mess. But, like, the AFC or the NFC South is horrendous, and no one's going to challenge them. They already won what will be their toughest game in that division, which is going to New Orleans. Absolutely, unequivocally, they are going to roll in the NFC South. Their schedule softens up. The Bucs are, I think, the only team that can challenge Philly for the one seed now in the NFC, unless Philly kind of has a bit of a stretch where they don't play well, but we'll see. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We're going to talk about what I thought was maybe not the best game, but the most important game of the day. We'll talk about that why next. Make sure you tune into For Frequency's Sake on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Twitch each Sunday during the football season from 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. The boys from For Fantasy's Sake will be bringing the fire fantasy football takes, updating you on the week's rankings and injuries, and getting you ready for your fantasy football matchups each and every week. The show is interactive, so be sure to send your questions. You can find them at For Frequency's Sake on Facebook, at FFSQC on Twitter, or you can send them an email at forfantasysakeqc@gmail.com. This episode is brought to you by The Corner Tap. Who doesn't need a solid handcuff on their fantasy squad? Grab a bite to eat at Clint's Draft House while watching the noon games, and then head on over across the Moline Rock Island border to The Corner Tap for some libations during the 3 o'clock games. Every Sunday is fun day at the Corner Tap with $3 tall boys, Bloody Marys, Jack Daniels, and $2 PBR drafts. Head into the Corner Tap, 4018 14th Avenue, Rock Island, and get into the end zone. All right, so this very well could have been the best game today. This was by no means the best played game today. Probably Green Bay, New England. Maybe. Not a lot of great football today. A couple games with weather. This was one of them. Some ridiculously horrific offense. Bad quarterback play, etc. That's why I wasn't the best football watching experience today. But football Sundays are fun regardless. But it was a little tougher to get through this week. First one of the year where we have struggled to get across the finish line. Things picked up as they always do in the witching hour, first half of the day. Second half with only three games. That Panthers-Cardinals game was fucking terrible. The Broncos-Raiders game had some fun moments, honestly. And the Packers-Patriots game was fun, but slow in the first half. So second half it picked up, first half rough, but overall, still, good Sunday as always. The game that I'm talking about, I think the most important game of the day, Bills-Ravens. We learned a couple things today. One, Ravens, ridiculously inept at holding leads. We'll get to that. Two, the Bills finally able to win a close game, and here is why that's important. They're obviously going to have to do that in the playoffs. It was nice to see them chip away, be able to come back from a deficit, manage the ball in a sloppy game, where everyone just expects them to be this. Look, this is what people call them. They call them a dome team that plays in the worst weather city in the world, or in the league. And that's very true. Can they prove themselves to be able to be competent in elements? Today, they were able to. They had a – listen, their defense was great. They only allowed points, really. So they're down 17-3 in about what felt like 2 minutes. First, I think second play of the game, Allen throws a bad pick. Second or third drive, Ravens get set up on the doorstep after a fumble. It's 17-3, and from that moment, the Bills have to claw back. And they were able to do so. The defense played well. They were able to hold the Ravens and put them in tough spots, and I thought that was impressive. There's a lot with the Ravens that is gross. Let's start with those. The biggest thing is people are going to try to figure a lot out, but it comes down to one thing. Greg Roman is not a good play caller. He's not a good game manager. He's not a good schematic coach. I understand that you had to wing stuff together. You had to turn water into wine with navigating Lamar through his rookie season and his style of play. Well, guess what, man? We're not there anymore. You can do stuff outside of that to make this offense feasible. They're too predictable. Their running game with their running backs is non-existent. It's non-existent. If it's not Lamar, it's nobody. They have zero depth and zero creativity to their passing game. It's either deep shots, we talked about short, intermediate, deep shots, deep crossing routes, little pops to the tight end, or nothing. They don't do anything creative on the offensive side when it comes to throwing. They get these leads. This is the fifth straight home game where they've lost and had a lead. They were up 7 last year against Green Bay and lost. They were up 10 last year to the Rams and lost. 7 against Pittsburgh at home and lost. 21 2 weeks ago against Dallas, against Miami in the fourth quarter. All these are fourth quarter or at some point leads, by the way, not just fourth quarter. 21 points in the fourth quarter and lost. 17 points early on in this game, and they lost. This is unacceptable. You have to be able to sustain drives. You have to be able to not just hope Lamar gashes you to death and hits you with these big chump plays, because that's not sustainable. Man, it's not sustainable. I don't understand. There's so many NFL coaches that get put on a pike when they have when they're a bad play caller. You know, there's so many coaches that we are just always look at first, like, well, this guy doesn't know what they're doing. How does Greg Roman get a fucking pass every year? This offense hasn't evolved since Lamar's rookie season. It hasn't. Just because he maximized it and won an MVP as a second-year player because he was better than any of us ever imagined and is one of the best players in the league and is one of the more extraordinary players of all time, that this dude gets a pass and it's just like, eh, whatever, Lamar will save us. What the fuck? How? How is nobody talking about how this guy continues to navigate through life without being criticized or called out? I do not understand it. So I wish I was on the For Fantasy Sake show this morning, because I saw the show rundown, and they were talking about how Lamar held Hollywood Brown back. And I know they're talking about fantasy points, but I wish I could have been on there, because I would have went off, because it's not him. It's their offense. Their offensive scheme sucks. It's terrible. It's so bad. They have no creativity in the passing game. It's either deep shots, it's either deep crossers, or something to the tight ends. They have no creativity in the passing game. How on earth do you have the stable running backs with a system that is predicated on running the ball? You can't hold leads. You can't manage manage drives. You should be dominant in short yardage. You're almost 50-50. It is baffling to me. It's baffling to me how Greg Roman and this scheme, I don't get it, man. I just don't get it. All right. Let's talk about the fourth down call. because I'm going to defend it. And then I might crush Lamar a little bit, but I'm probably not, because honestly, that wasn't the worst idea ever. It's just bad outcome. So, fourth down and goal. They have a drive where they started from their own one. Bills pin them deep. And they go 99 yards. Took like 12, 13 plays. They take off 9.5 minutes in the fourth. They're at, I think they lost a yard or two, so they're at the 3. And they decide to go for it. They don't get it. Worst possible outcome, though. Lamar kind of, you know, lollipops one into the end zone off his back foot after they pressure. And it gets picked off by Jordan Poyer. So, you miss it. Instead of giving up the ball to 2, you give up the ball at the 20 because Poyer picked it off in the end zone. So that's the biggest thing. John Harbaugh said after the game, like, if you kick the field goal, then you're allowing Buffalo to have a four down drive where they have 4 downs no matter what. And I agree, it puts your defense in a tough spot. You don't get it, it's just incomplete. Then they start at the 2, and that's a bit tougher. The fact that, honestly, I think the only reason that is criticized is because the fact, like, even if they don't get it, they start at the 2 in a bad weather game. So there's 2 sides. So I think it's okay to criticize them for not kicking. Because, again, the facts. It's been hard to move the ball. Even though the Bills have come back, it wasn't this blitzkrieg all at once. They had done it progressively throughout the game. I believe if you take the field goal there, trust your defense to get another stop or at least hold them to 3. Which, again, they did hold them to 3. But, granted, the Bills were moving. Josh Allen made some freakazoid plays, which is what he does. And the Bills were down there. If they had about a minute left, they would have been able to punch it in for 6. But they just kind of killed the clock, took 3-1 at the gun, which I think was a smart play. In this situation for Baltimore, it probably honestly looks the best if you're not scoring. It looks the best if Poyer doesn't pick it off and he knocks it down and the Bills have to start from their own 2. Because then you get different play calling. Who knows? You can pit. If you all of a sudden stop them, 3 and out, they're punting from their own end zone. Shitty weather game. Who knows what happens? You then are around 2 minutes or under 2 minutes left. You get the ball with a short field. Go kick a field goal. You got the greatest kicker ever. So I see the vision. It's just bad outcome. Right play. Worst possible outcome. So that's why we're going to criticize it. But I also think it is a little fair to say, maybe you should have just taken the points, think of the situation, trust your defense. So that's why. So I'm not going to criticize. Not going to criticize the coaching decision for the play for that. Am going to criticize, again, why on God's green earth they resorted and Lamar ended up having to take a 10-step drop off his back foot, lollipop Hail Mary into the corner of the end zone on a 4th and goal from the 3. No creativity. That's why. None. Again, man, Greg Roman has blackmail on somebody because that man dodges criticism like it's no one's business. I ain't never heard anybody call him out, but I've heard people call out Bieniemy. I've heard people call out insert OC here. People have called out. We've seen Green Bay's play calling called out. Before, we've seen Phillies. We always saw it in Seattle with Russ. You know, we see guys play calling. We get to see teams play calling get called out all the time. Now at Tampa Bay's play calling, with Byron Leftwich at times is getting called out. Obviously, that team that plays in Illinois that is masquerading as a professional football team. We always call out their play callers. So how Greg Roman just kind of skates by with his dick in the wind like nothing's ever happened. I don't know. I just don't know. But yeah, like I said, not the best game today, but I think the most important because an important win for the Bills. If the Bills lose today, it's kind of like a shit, not good, not the sky is falling type of situation, but it would have felt pretty bad. And for the Ravens, now 2-2. Not sky is falling, but a situation though where a lot of questions to answer. Question is, though, who is going to ask the right questions to or who's going to ask the right ones to fix the issues that they have in these situations at home. We'll take a quick break. For Fantasy's Sake has teamed up with Route 96 Boutique to raise a little more cash for Toys for Tots this season. From September 11th until the end of November, 10% off of all purchases made with Route 96 on Sundays will be donated to us for our Toys for Tots drive. At Route 96, they believe in girl power. They want a place that people of all shapes and sizes can shop and feel empowered and beautiful. They want you to be the best you possible, and they are committed to bringing you different styles while also providing some basics to express the true you. You can find them on Facebook and at Route96Boutique.com. Again, that's Route96Boutique.com. All right, let's talk about some quick hitters, as we always do on a Sunday. We've got four games here I want to run through real quick. So first, Philadelphia-Jacksonville. We learned today there's levels to this game, as there always is. Now, Jacksonville, I think, will be fine. I think Jacksonville is a team that is still absolutely in the realm of a playoff possibility. And they got off to a quick start. They made Jalen Hurts a little uncomfortable. Another nasty weather game. Another learning moment for Trevor Lawrence. Listen, when we're talking about quarterbacks, we're evaluating young quarterbacks. These are the games sometimes you have. The thing is, can you have flashes of good? And Trevor Lawrence, 2 weeks in a row before this, was brilliant. Okay? He had his struggles in week one. He made a couple plays today. He was awesome in week two and three. He had a couple plays today where he was good. He had a lot more, though, where he was bad. It was a bad weather game against what might be the best offensive and defensive line combo in the NFL. I don't know if there's a close set. I don't even think it's a might be. I think it absolutely is. We're probably talking about a top one or two O-line. We're talking about maybe the best D-line depth-wise, all from top to bottom, edge to edge. Interior is loaded. All of these guys on this defensive front are problems. You got to go up against Fletcher Cox and Jordan Davis on the interior, man. No one wants that smoke. Them boys are tough. And they gave Jacksonville's front seven hell today. And that's a front seven for the Jags that I think is really, really good, especially defensively. But the Jags are going to be fine. But they learned today that there's a bit levels when you're trying to knock out heavyweights in this league. And I think they're going to learn from this. And I think Trevor Lawrence is going to learn from this. And I expect them to come back next week and play well. I'm not sure who they got next week or if they play next week. They might be off. They play Houston at home, 7-point favorites at home against Houston. That is one I expect them to play well and win. So a very good chance to get a get right game next week after it went well early. And then you kind of got punched in the mouth for a couple hours and it didn't go well. So Dougie P will have those guys right next week. But for Philadelphia, man, great job of sticking with it. They were down 14-0. They could have folded. Jalen Hurts just makes plays. He just does. And he wasn't good. He wasn't great early. It was rough. And he had a couple bad bounces. That pick six that Cisco had, I think, was a intermediate cross to the left of the field, and I think it kind of got deflected up on a 1-on-1, but it wasn't a great throw. But Hurts just makes plays. It was like a third and goal from the 16 near the end of the half. He picks up 13 yards on a scramble. Then he runs it in for the score. Like, that's just stuff that he does that he's improving on and able to make these plays. I've always loved the way he runs the ball, and he continues to improve and continues to impress. And listen, man, that was a good job by them to navigate that game and win convincingly. The main story, though, for them is just how damn good they are up front on both sides of the ball. All right, moving to Lambeau, Green Bay and New England. This is a game that was ugly early. Patriots went down the field and scored on their first drive on a field goal. Packers get the ball back, first play of the game, big chunk. Second play, a bubble screen, and Romeo Doubs gets the ball ripped out on a strip sack, or on a strip, excuse me. And then from there, the game kind of stagnates. Packers end up scoring on one of their drives in the second quarter. But the offense doesn't look good. Rodgers is missing guys. He's not throwing the ball well whatsoever. And then throws a really bad pick six to end the first half. Just kind of lofts it to the near side where Lazard was there. Honestly, at the end of the day, Jack Jones made a fantastic play at the corner position. He's the one who had the strip. He stripped the Dobbs and got the fumble too. And once he got that pick, like he jumped that route and picked it off and went all the way home. And then after that, the defenses or the offenses started to turn up. Both they went back and forth, I think, for five straight drives with touchdowns. The biggest story, I think, in this game, there's two of them. Let's start first with New England. Brian Hoyer gets hurt on the second drive of the game, and then it's Bailey Zappe, the kid from Western Kentucky last year that threw for just under 6,000 yards, guys. 6,000 yards. He threw for 5,900 last year at Western Kentucky, and I believe he threw, not accounted for, but threw for 62 touchdowns. This kid's tough. He's really good, and he's got a lot of skill. Now, as an NFL quarterback, I don't know, but I do know this. He's got a lot of arm talent, and he's got some moxie. And I think the fact that he was able to hang in there and make plays in this game, I thought, honestly, look, their offensive coaches are Matt Patricia and Joe Judge. It's not the greatest thing. But I thought Belichick coached his ass off today, and I thought they did a lot of stuff that was, like, this was probably the most you take out of a Patriots game this year, where you're like, oh, this is something we could build towards. I don't know what Mac Jones' status is right now with the injury, but I kind of hope he doesn't, you know, keep him out a little bit. I want to see Zappe cook, because let's be honest, it didn't look much different than what Mac Jones would normally put out there. Now maybe you put tape on Zappe, you can figure some stuff out. He had some bad awareness on a couple sacks. We'll say this, Green Bay's D-line. Hoo-wee. Rashawn Gary has come alive. Man, that is a dude. He is an absolute dog. But for Zappe, man, I'm not saying this is some future star, but I don't think he's a dud. Let's see what can happen. I'd love to be able to see him start next week. A lot of people think the Mac Jones injury is really bad. Credit to New England for hanging in there today. Credit for Bailey Zappe to stay in it. I will say this, in overtime, I thought punting there to give the ball back to the Packers was the wrong decision. I know you're at the 40, and if you don't get it, you're fucked anyway. But again, you're fucked anyway. Like, just go for it, see what happens. You get it, then you're pretty much in field goal range, and you could steal a win, in an NFL, an AFC, whatever. That's all wide open. But the other big point for me today, Romeo Doubs, man, he's a star, and he's gonna continue to grow into one throughout the year. Doubs is a guy. Now I know he had the drop to end regulation because Rodgers put an absolute dime in the breadbasket, and Doubs hauled it in. But when he fell to the ground, the ball popped out. Now, listen, I know people don't like that call. I instantly just said no catch, but that's also because I've seen so many called no catch. When we're being honest, that probably should be a touchdown. But the rule is dumb, and it wasn't. Regardless, though, Doubs is really good, man. And it seems like him and Rodgers have a lot of rapport already, and they're figuring it out. Doubs is going to get a lot of targets throughout the year. Doubs, he's their new wide receiver one. All right, let's move on to Vegas and Denver. I thought this was an easy thing. Tail of the run games. Vegas's was great, and Denver's was bad. Javonte Williams goes out, but the Denver offense couldn't sustain drives without their run game. And Vegas, oddly enough, was able to run the ball successfully and very well. Josh Jacobs had over 140 yards and multiple touchdowns. They were able to play action and take shots downfield. Davante Adams, I think, had 9 grabs today. Defensively, listen, this is a Raiders team that was desperate and needed a win. They're the one team that I will say that has a really bad record. Like, they were, even though they're winless and now they're 1-3, they are not in a spot where I'm feeling terrible about them. I expect them to be able to still grind some stuff out. Like, the one issue I have is that they freaking play Kansas City next week and Kansas City owns them. But if you steal that game next week, then you're feeling like, oh shit, we can start cooking. But they're too good and they're too loaded. Not loaded, but like they have too many good players. Now, granted, again, it's not, I said they're kind of the Chargers from a year ago, but the dumbed down version. Like, instead of 12 or 13 blue chippers, they have like 6 or 7. But those guys are really good. And I think there's some other dudes that are playing well. Nate Hobbs for Illinois, from Illinois. Might be their third best defensive player behind Crosby and Jones and Chandler Jones. By the way, Max Crosby today was a freak. He is so good. Max Crosby is amazing, a superstar pass rusher in the NFL. And look, man, Vegas was able to win, and it was big for them. In a right now, we're at the spot where who knows who's going to get the wild cards in the AFC. It's easy to kind of pencil teams in the NFC. But in the AFC, man, it's so tough. It's so tough. Who are the teams that we sit here and can say, yeah, we probably know they're making it? The Bills and the Chiefs? And the Dolphins, maybe? Probably? More or less? Like, outside of that, Baltimore? What have they shown that's consistent of anything? The Bengals, who we're not for sure. The Browns have dropped two games they shouldn't have. You know, we know the Broncos are a mess. The Jags could, we hope, but no, we don't know. Someone's got to win that division. At the end of the day, like, there's going to be three wild cards in the AFC, probably two of them up for grabs, because I really do think the Dolphins are going to probably at worst be that five seed, as long as they stay healthy. But, I mean, no one wants to admit they're good, but what do I know? I don't know shit, apparently. I'm just a dummy. Hey, by the way, real quick, I'm also the guy that was told Illinois football. Sidebar. I was also the guy that was told Illinois football was going to be bad this year. Win four games, maybe. I said they're nuts. People, I don't mean, I'm just a dumb media guy. That's what they told me. They tell me I'm a dumb media guy. Hashtag it. Put a shirt out. Someone, DJ, you're listening to this. Text me about making a shirt. I want a shirt with my face that says dumb media guy. Then on the back, hashtag what do I know? But like the dumb spelling where you all run it together. Like W-H-U-D-D-I-N-O-U or something like that. I don't know. But it's all right. I just, when I'm right, know that I'm right, and I'm right way more than I'm not. Let's just be real. I'm willing to admit when I'm wrong, but when I'm on something, I'm on something, put people. Anywho, disregard. Back to what we were talking about. AFC, a lot of cooks in the kitchen. Let's just say that. A lot of cooks are in that kitchen. And Vegas, even though they dicked around for 3 weeks, not dead yet. You kind of need to beat Kansas City Monday night, though, next week. Because if not, oh, no. Your kitchen might explode. All right. Lastly, quick podcast tonight. Lastly, Jets-Steelers did not expect this to make the list today. But I need to get this off my chest. Zach Wilson, impressive. Very impressive. First game back. He still has his issues, but listen, man, they were down, what, 10? 20 to 10, I think, with 6 minutes left, and they just engineer two drives, and they do not fucking stop. Bam, 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 right down the field twice. They get the stop they need, go right down the field and score again to win the game. Wilson made big-time throws, man. This is what I'm saying. When I compare, when I'm talking about these young quarterbacks, and it's why I've kind of started to sour on a certain one that plays for a make-believe pro team in the state of Illinois that we're not going to talk about until I finally do, and I'm probably going to come fucking unglued because deep breaths. We're fine. I'm not going to talk about it tonight. I don't have the energy. I'm tired. I have a headache. And I just don't want to talk about it. Don't want to talk about them tonight. But I want to talk about this Jets team. Here's the thing, though. When I'm talking about the development of these young quarterbacks, Wilson, Lawrence, Lance, even though he doesn't fucking play, Mac Jones, the guy that plays on the high school team that's in the NFL in Chicago, in Illinois, shit. Guys from the year before of that class, Hurts, Burrow, Herbert, Tua, etc. Granted, they're more solidified. But they have moments where it struggles, but then they have moments where it's awesome. And let's be real, man, that final two drives, everything you could want from Zach Wilson. Everything. He has the pizzazz to make stuff happen. Is he perfect? God, no. But the stuff I saw today was the reason I thought all five of those kids from last year's class could very well be NFL franchise QBs. Because they have what it takes to have moments like this. And this was maybe the first one we've seen from Zach. And there was some stuff at the end of last season that made me be like, all right, I can see the vision. I'm coming to it. I can see it. And now I wasn't like super sold on it. You know, when the draft first happened, obviously. But again, I'm willing to admit when I'm wrong. And am I totally wrong on Zach? I don't know yet. But today was impressive. When you break it down, your first game back after an injury, yeah, you know, that defense. Now, granted, without T.J. Watt, their pass rush is almost non-existent, but they still got dudes. They have dudes everywhere. Cam Hayward, Minka. They're loaded on that defensive end. Devin Bush. I'm just saying, man, like, what he was able to do and how they were able to navigate that final 6-7 minutes, picture perfect. Absolute huge fan of it. And look, man, I've seen that from him. I haven't. There's other quarterbacks that are young that we're trying to figure out that I haven't seen something like that from. You probably know who I'm talking about, but it's not just him. There's multiple. I haven't seen that. You know, down 10. 5-6 minutes left on the road, and you just rip two straight drives like that, that are gotta have it drives. Big, huge step forward for Zach Wilson's progression today. Love to see it. I love to see it. And this isn't a drag X name through the mud. I thought that certain guy was all right today. Certain stuff that still annoys me, and I hope that we'll fix, but again, it's early. Just mad as a whole when it comes to that team. But when it comes to Zach Wilson, that today was a huge step forward, and hopefully he can continue to progress like that. I'm okay with bad games. Like I said, we saw with Trevor Lawrence today. I'm okay with bad games with young quarterbacks. You know? You gotta learn, man. You gotta fucking learn. It's not gonna be easy peasy, lemon squeezy, roses and violets all over the place. It's just not. Unless you're Justin Herbert and you're just a super freak when you roll out of bed, but not everyone's like that, okay? Trevor Lawrence is close, and he's going to get there eventually, but his is more of a project, is a process than a guy like Herbert, who just kind of got here and was like, oh, okay, that's something. But for a guy like Wilson, there's been some good flashes, and there's been a decent amount of bad flashes. But today was a really good step forward, and again, he's not perfect. But, again, I can take bad games. Can you sprinkle some good in there? Can you sprinkle some moments in there? Can you have a win like this, like they had today? They did. He did. Impressed. Lastly, Kenny Pickett, probably the starting quarterback for the Steelers going forward. Mike Tomlin felt he had no other choice. And Kenny Pickett had two picks today. Both were pretty tough breaks. One... I think it was his first pass, actually. It was a short yardage situation. They ran a play-action deep shot over the middle. And the ball did kind of hang in the air forever, but Claypool's got to come down with that at the end of the day. That's one you got to have. Got to help your young guy out. And Claypool is a guy that everyone tells me how great he is, but he constantly pisses me off. and got to have that one. You got to have that play. And he didn't. I will say this, the offense had some vigor in it when he came in. He was able to make a couple throws. He's athletic and can navigate. I have no idea where the Kenny Pickett story goes. It's like, I don't know. It's like, Nick Wright, I think, made the joke. It's like, listen, Mitch Trubisky, it's the heart that's still going to kill you. The Kenny Pickett heart might kill you too, but we definitely know it'll keep you alive for a little bit. We're going to find out what Kenny Pickett's got, and I'm glad that he seems like he's got the keys to the car. Moving forward, we'll take one last break, come back to wrap up the show after this. This episode is brought to you by Clint's Draft House Pizza and Grill in Moline and Davenport. Chase away your Sunday scaries at Clint's Draft House Pizza and Grill this season. Located in the Belgium neighborhood of 7th Street in Moline, Clint's Draft House Pizza and Grill is home to some of the Quad City's best food and drink specials. On Sunday, there's no better place to be. Clint's is serving up 75-cent wings and $4 Bloody Marys all day. And is your favorite team playing in those out-of-market games? Well, you'll never miss a second of the action on one of their 10 screens with NFL Sunday Ticket. And after you've had your wing and bloody fix, finish off your football watching experience with one of their famous Quad City style pop pizzas. And folks, they know pizza. They've been spinning QC style pies for the last 22 years. So make Clint's part of your Sunday football routine. Clint's Draft House Pizza and Grill, 7th Street in Moline. And also, Clint is now serving up their famous pizza and fried chicken on the Iowa side of the river as well. Clint's Pizza House and Chicken opens up daily at 4 p.m. so everyone in the Quad Cities can enjoy their QC-style pizza and Henny Penny fried chicken. That's Clint Pizza House and Chicken, 7th Street Moline and 1601 West 3rd Street in Davenport. Good stuff as always here on this show. Check us out tomorrow night for another banger. We'll wrap up the week. We'll close week four, put it in the rear view with the Monday Nighter, Rams Niners. Excited to watch that. And then we will have, I'll probably do some college stuff. I'm either going to do college stuff or if I eventually get mad, which I might, I don't know. If I have it in me, might have a rant. But I don't know. I don't think I'm going to. I'm going to do my best not to. But tomorrow, other than that, oh, we'll also have the NFL Elite Eight. We'll have a new team at number one. Haven't really kind of figured out the rest yet. But I will say Tuesday, I want to mention this. We'll probably release this on Wednesday. But we'll release it Wednesday. We're going to record it Tuesday night. Playoff preview. For baseball, Nick and Mac will be on. We're going to see if Nick can continue his hot streak. We're going to break down every team in the Major League Baseball postseason. All 12 of them now? 12. Six from each side. Break them down, see who we think can go all the way and win the World Series, etc., etc. All of that coming this week. That'll be tomorrow's pod and then Wednesday's pod. So, I mean, I'll be recording for five straight days. Tonight, I'll record tomorrow night. I'll record Tuesday night, Wednesday night for the Sinister Six. Thursday night, we'll upload Friday. A lot of content this week. A lot of it. I hope you enjoy. Thank you all for listening. As always, like, share, tell a friend, etc., etc., all that jazz. Until then, this has been the Educated Ignorance Podcast. As always, if you ain't got the game, you best pass the sticks. We will see you guys tomorrow night. Thank you all for listening. Until then, we are out. Peace.